It is good to be here. And I'll speak for myself instead of for Carol and I. I was a bit apprehensive about coming to the seminary community. I remember what it was like back in 1969 when I graduated from here. And in the years after that, there was a lot of tension. And what has really been a marvelous blessing for me is to see the community, the care, the attitude of faculty and staff, and as some faculty members put it, the collegiality that is being experienced here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. That's a great blessing. And I pray that out in the church, in the circuits, in the districts, that we could experience that same kind of collegiality. It doesn't always happen, you know, that I'm seeing here these days. So it's good to be back. It really is. We've been telling stories over the last days, and I'd like to tell one more story. And I'd like to see if you might be able to put yourself in the shoes of one of the people. There are four characters in the story. One is Joni, D-J-O-N-I, who comes from Indonesia. Another is myself. Another is Bob, a volunteer. And the final is Marcus Fang, who is a foreign student advisor. For a change, the plane was on time. As it skidded to a halt at the runway of Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee, Wisconsin, near Stevens Point, you know exactly where that is, so you're already fitting into the picture. Joni, who was on the plane, was rejoicing that his trip from Jakarta, Indonesia, was almost over. He'd been on the plane and in airports for almost 30 hours, and he was tired. But the adrenaline was also pumping through his body as he was imagining what it was going to be like to now be a student at a university in the United States, something that four of his siblings had already appreciated. Inside the terminal was a man named Bob, and on a card he had the letters scrawled D-J-O-N-I, a volunteer from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point who was going to look for Joni to pick him up and bring him to the university. And he was a little bit nervous, too, because he'd dealt with a lot of people but had never met anyone from Indonesia. The door of the plane opened, and Joni stepped out in his light jacket in January. And it was cold because it was below zero. Bob inside had thought about that and was considerate enough to remember that he needed to bring a coat along to help Joni out. But Joni had to walk not through the jetway, but out onto the tarmac because the Central Wisconsin Airport is not a big, fabulous airport. And as Joni walked to the terminal itself, he got colder and colder. And by the time he got inside, was shivering because he'd never experienced anything below 70 degrees in his whole lifetime. And it was cold. And he walked inside the terminal and saw the sign Joni and walked up to Bob and they introduced themselves to each other. And they waited a bit as they chatted about who they were and kind of where they'd come from. And they walked over to the baggage carousel. And in addition to the two carry-ons that Joni had, he had two monstrous suitcases. And they lugged those out to the car and began their drive to Stevens Point. You have to know that the terminal is 23 miles north of Stevens Point. And as they drove, Joni saw nothing. There was a farm here. There was a building over there. There were big swamp areas, lots of trees. And you might have imagined what he was thinking. This America has wide open spaces. What have I really come to? He's from Jakarta, remember, not a small community. And you have to know that Indonesia has the fourth largest population in the world. They got to the university, and Bob already had the name of the residence hall in his pocket, so he pulled it out, looked at it, and drove Joni over to the residence hall, helped him up the stairway because there were no elevators in that dormitory, helped him up the stairway and got him settled in his room and said, "Joni, it's been nice to meet you. Hope to see you again sometime." And Joni's expecting, well, maybe he'll call tomorrow or the next day, only 6 months later to find out, "Hope to see you again sometime," means nothing. It's only an expression. So Joni sits in his room, and he waits. School hasn't started yet. Orientation hasn't begun, and so he's not connected to anybody. What does he do? There's only one thing to do. You call home and talk to Mom and Dad. Let them know you had a safe trip. That's how he spent the first day in his dormitory room. The next day, I got into the picture because Marcus Fong, the foreign student advisor, called me and said, "Carl, we have one young man in our office. He is very, very homesick. Do you think you could help him out?" And I said, "Mark," I said, "I'm a campus pastor. I just don't have a lot of time. My plate is full." No, I didn't say that. But maybe we could very well say that very thing. I don't have time because I have this many responsibilities and I can't extend myself any further. I said, "Mark, I'll be right over to pick him up." And I met Joni. And we went to the bank, went to the post office. I showed him the downtown. We walked through a store. We sat at Peace Lutheran Campus Center and talked for a while, invited him to our home, and then I took him back after spending the day with him. You know, that first day that he was here, he had called home once, twice, but more than that, he had called home 5 times. He was hurting, and it was very difficult for him to be here. After 4.5 years, Joni graduated from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, with his undergraduate bachelor's degree, and he's back in Jakarta or Indonesia somewhere. I've lost track of him. I wonder about him. He came from a Muslim family, and over the 4.5 years that he was there, we did have conversations about the Christian faith, about Jesus. But I'm concerned because I don't know if he ever really got the message. He never indicated to me that he came to know Jesus Christ as his Savior. And so I'm wondering what happens now that he's back in Indonesia. 10% of the people in Indonesia are not Muslim. Christians are among that 10%. And as I tell the story about Joni and as I think about him, I pray for him and pray that just perhaps the Christian hospitality that he began to feel while he was here in the United States in Stevens Point, the witness that he heard for the first time in his life about Jesus the Christ, may be carried on by someone else, and that there might be a witness and a testimony to Joni. Bob, you were right. 532,000 international students in this country. And they're not just in St. Louis or in Stevens Point or at the University of Michigan or Michigan State University or Berkeley or Madison. They are all over our country. In fact, the Concordia system, I mentioned it in one class. Anybody know how many international students in the Concordia system? Nobody from that class is here. So I'll tell you, there are 3.2% of the population of the Concordias. 433 international students at our Concordia system. Not all are Christians. But the international students who are here, who are scattered they're scattered all over the 3,000 plus colleges and universities in our country. I'm going to give you a few statistics about these international students. 90%, this is my estimation, 90% do not know Jesus Christ. They come here without having heard the gospel. Some from Europe come perhaps having had the gospel presented in their countries, but they're living in a post-Christian era and couldn't care a whole lot about the Christian faith. 80% of the students who are here never have a Christian friend. People ask the question, well, do most of these students stay here in the United States? 80% return to their countries. They return as students having been touched by the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, by the hospitality and care that people can give, or they return knowing nothing about the Christian faith, just as they came. 70% of the international students who come here never have the opportunity to have a meal in an American home. You know, that was almost incomprehensible to me. I met a couple from Korea. They had been here for 2 years. Bill Mahler, who's the registrar at Concordia Ann Arbor, has been a volunteer on Wednesday nights doing conversation. And he knew the Korean couple, and he thought, what a good gesture if I could invite them to our home before they go back to Korea. The couple entered his home 2 years after they'd been here, and their comment to Bill was, you know, Bill, this is the first time that we have been in an American home. 60% of the international students who come here come from the 1040 window. The 1040 window begins on the west hump of Africa and extends to Indonesia, the Philippines, Taiwan, Japan. It begins, the sill of the 1040 window is 10 degrees above the equator, and it goes up to 40 degrees above the equator. Within this 1040 window are countries like China and India, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Libya, Morocco, Indonesia, Hong Kong, Macau. When you think about most of these countries, you know that predominantly they are Muslim countries, other than India and China. And in most of those countries, there is little opportunity for missionary work, for missionary service, for missionary love and care. And it is from those very countries that students are coming. 60% are coming to the United States, giving us an opportunity, as Dr. Westcott said, to have the world come to our doorstep, that we might be God's people to the people of the world. Do all of you know about the wine that I talked about yesterday? What vintage was that? I really made a big mistake. It was 96. Because somebody came up to me afterwards and said, I'd really like that wine. If it was that old, it was pretty quality wine. I have to be careful about my dates. In 1979, in our church in Madison, Wisconsin, began the first intentional ministry among international students. And it was in Madison, Wisconsin that soon after 1980, they began an international friendship center. In 1992, with my call as evangelistic missionary among international students in southern Michigan, the Board for Mission Services decided to pay my salary as a result of the 1992 Synodical Convention, and they asked me to go to southern Michigan to develop a model for reaching out to international students. The model that was really intended is that it would be a church planting model, so that ethnic ministries would be developed in proximity to university communities. They sent me to 6 universities, a massive vision that somebody had, to Michigan State University, University of Michigan, Western Michigan, Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, and Wayne State University in Detroit. 10,000 international students are attending these universities. I soon discovered that from previous experience also in Stevens Point, where we had worked with international students, that church planting was really not the model. The model was leadership development. And so we began to work with international students to train them as leaders, leaders here, and also leaders as they return to their homes in whatever country they might be coming from. And also training leadership in area congregations. We have had a mindset in the LCMS for many years that missions is where? Over there, out there. And I'm really glad to say that we as a church body have placed lots of dollars into offering plates so that men and women have been able to go overseas. Indeed, a great blessing. Today, I believe, Bob, maybe you know, we have connections in 56 countries of the world. It's right about that, where we are serving in one way or another. That's a great blessing. But the challenge to American people today is, how can we help American Lutheran Christians from Iowa, from Minnesota, from Louisiana, how can we help them understand and see the mission field that is at our doorstep? People are shy. People are hesitant. People are afraid to reach out cross-culturally. People are often turned in on themselves in congregations. And it isn't, it is frequent that I hear the comment, We just can't have any more programs in this congregation because we don't have enough volunteers for the programs we have. And congregations often are turned in on themselves. Somehow we need to help congregations see that God is bringing people to us. In 1992, 6% of our campus ministries, 160-some campus ministries, had intentional work among international students. Today, 28% of our campus ministries are reaching out intentionally to international students. In 1992, in Michigan, the call was to touch each of those universities and, as I saw, to help equip the areas to minister to the international students. Today, I'm glad to say that in East Lansing, in the Lansing area, at Michigan State University and Lansing Community College, where they have approximately 3,000 international students, there is a mission society of 6 congregations and other volunteers that has been formed. They are supporting a woman, half-time, Marcia Mitwitty, who serves as a director for international student ministry. Carol and I moved from East Lansing in July because they were doing such a wonderful job in reaching out to the international students that we could move on. And that continues to be the role of a missionary today, to equip and train and then to move to a new place. In southern Michigan, at Western Michigan University, a congregation, Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Andy Ritchie is from that congregation. If you need more information about that, talk to him. But they have a great outreach among the international students. At Eastern Michigan University, where we no longer have an American campus pastor serving the American students, the building has now become an international friendship center. And Bob and Catherine Carlton, he's a faculty member still at Concordia Ann Arbor, he and Catherine have agreed to be directors of the international student ministry there in that place. Central Michigan University has the inklings and the desire to move ahead with international student ministry, and they're trying to gather some money so that they can employ a director for international student ministry so the work can go on. I'm glad to say that we are moving ahead, and I praise God for that opportunity. Carol's here, and she has 2 very special guests with her this morning. I'm going to let Carol come up, and also, if you'd like, Yoko and Ruth to come up. And they're going to share a time, especially to give you a little bit more of a clearer view as to what international student ministry really is all about. Do you need some more microphones, or how do you want to do that?
Does this one come off?
Does this come off? No, but no. We can get one of these here.
You can sit down.
I just want to preface my remarks with, when we moved to Michigan, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I would just get a teaching job and continue to teach. Well, the Lord was going to have totally different plans for me, and those plans were going to begin a very unique and special ministry that would also help set the model. My gifts are particularly in early childhood education, and what the Lord was going to do is He was going to show me the need of not the students, but the spouses and those young children that were that live in those university housing places. If you can envision, my ministry entails one large Rubbermaid box, one canvas bag into which I fit 2 vinyl tablecloths, a flannel board, and some writing boards that I've created. Among that, I have another bag that I put my Play-Doh rollers and cutters in, and a few other things. And I'm a traveling teacher. And what I do is that at the very beginning, I was invited into the homes. I would go to where the people were. They didn't come to us. We would go to them. I would go to their apartment. They had politely moved all of their furniture out of the way into a little space, maybe about the size of 4 rows across and maybe 5 rows back. And around that, I would spread my vinyl tablecloth on the floor. That was our instant classroom. Put out all the things that I had brought and proceed to have children gather around. It only got to be a problem when we would have 15 children and 15 adults in that little space. And then the Lord just said, well, we need to move to a different place. I tried to divide the groups, but they didn't want to be divided because they were friends. They had become a community, women and children from Germany, from the Czech Republic, from Canada, from Taiwan, from mainland China, from Japan, from Korea, from South America, from all over. The Lord has brought these people together to be friends. That was really the ministry that I did in East Lansing. Now that I moved to Ypsilanti, the ministry remains the same. I now meet for the toddlers group, which we began last fall, which means that you have to be two or under. I have some three-year-olds, but a parent must come with them, a father, a grandfather, a grandmother, or a mother come with them. It's an hour program, but we meet at Divine Shepherd Lutheran Church because that is very close to the North Campus of the University of Michigan, and that's where all the people live. But the Lord just continues to open doors. One of the most wonderful avenues that He gave me, and Bob mentioned that before, was the avenue of the LWML, Lutheran Women in Mission, that He was going to bring me into contact with women because of my position as Public Relations Director of International, that I was asked to speak at many district conventions across America, and that was one of the major avenues that we got to share the story of International Student Ministry. And those women became the greatest support for me to be able to buy Bibles, to be able to buy crayons, markers, paper, whatever I needed for these young children especially. But another important part of that ministry was the ministry to the spouses, especially to the women that travel with their husbands. As I think about pastors' wives that go out, they're kind of an attachment to you sometimes, and to find what their niche is, where they belong, to become the person that God wants them to be. But the Lord was going to give me this ministry among these very, very special women. I often would ask them to go with me to rallies where I was asked to speak to women's organizations. And I didn't think about it, because it's quite easy for me to get up and tell the story of how God has worked in my life, but I would ask them to come along, forgetting that they were speaking to us in their second language. Now, if you can imagine, if you had to even learn how to say a very basic conversation in another language, German might be pretty easy for us, but if you had to do it in Chinese or Japanese, it could be a real test for us. But yet these people have come here with a willingness and openness to learn our language, to learn how to communicate with us. One of the things I wanted to share was that when people come here as Christians, and they're really a minority, is I did a Bible study group, and the women went from all different countries. The reason they wanted to do the Bible study, of course, was to learn more about God working in their lives, but they wanted to learn the religious vocabulary that we use, because they had learned lots of English in their countries, but no one ever taught them the religious terminologies, and that was one of the things that we could offer to them. But many of the women came not knowing Jesus Christ. Our task, our privilege, was to share with them the Lord that we knew and to live that in our lives. The two women I have here today, you probably all know, Yoko and Ruth. They both came here as international students, and I'm going to give them a chance to do some sharing. That's the most interesting way I've ever seen a microphone put before.
I would like you to stand up.
We'll have them stand.
Turn on. Turn on.
Does it work? Oh. I'll have them stand. Why don't you both stand?
Yeah.
It's okay. We have not practiced. And I just really thank them very much, because it takes a lot of courage to stand before a group of men especially, and to share some of the things. First, I want you to share your name and your country. And maybe you can tell where you went to college in your home country, if you did that, or high school. Okay?
My name is Yoko Pisker. I came from Japan. I came from the city which name is Urawa, and it's located suburb of Tokyo. And I went to Lutheran. My father is the principal of Lutheran school, so I had to go to elementary school to high school. I went to Urawa Lutheran elementary school to high school. And the college is it's pretty hard name, Joshi Seigakuin, means Women Bible Junior College in Saitama Prefecture, also which is located in suburb of Tokyo.
Hi, my name is Ruth Wu. My Chinese name is Lin Yangyun. I'm from Malaysia, and the state I came from, if you know Malaysia, I came from Perak State. The city name is Taiping. That's where I go to my high school elementary school, and I came here for college. I didn't go to college in my country.
My next question is, why did you come to America? What was your motivation? What was so important about coming to America?
First, I wanted to find my husband in America. It's kidding. I just... Actually, I found a husband. Basically, I wanted to stop my life in Japan. Means I was being a secretary in a company. It's really crazy. Just working 9 to 5 at office and 5 to like a 10 or 2 midnight at working for taking care of the customers. Like I was working at the computer company and then just 10 to 2, like after 5 to 2 was just drinking alcohol and then eating a supper or just being crazy. Also, I wanted to change my life, and but it's go back to the college in Japan is very, very difficult. So, also, I wanted to learn English, and just sorry, I didn't have intentionally have some Christian meaning to come to U.S. However, I wanted to change my life, and I wanted to get some degrees in U.S. I went to school in Concordia, Irvine.
I came to United States basically for college because I'm a music student, and in Malaysia the college there, they don't offer music major, they have all other subjects. So I've been working for a couple of years after high school before I come here for college, and the college I come is in St. Paul, Minnesota, College of St. Catherine.
When you arrived in America and you got off that plane, how did you feel? And what happened shortly after you got off that plane? You heard Joni's story.
Okay. I feel, first I arrived at Los Angeles airport. I feel so many different kind of people. It's Mexican and black. And I don't know European, American. I couldn't discriminate those people. But however, Asian and black, Mexican, I was so surprised. So many different races of people are there.
When I arrived, my school has a host family program. So my host family, like Joni, they hold up my name. And I have an aunt staying in Nebraska. So she came to pick me up at the airport also. And after that, I went to a Chinese church in St. Paul, so that is like the first Sunday I'm in church. So then I'm still homesick, but not as bad because the church becomes my community, and then the school is very friendly. That's my impression about American. Even you don't know that person, they'll still say hi and smile. So that's my impression. I think I'm very blessed to be in a private college, which is very friendly. Mm-hmm.
I had a friend from Mexico. She was doing postdoc study, and she was returning to the University of Mexico. And the last day, we had a little party for her and her little girl. And one of the things she shared with me, and she said, well, Americans are friendly. They all say, hi, how are you? But Americans don't understand relationships because they really don't care how you are, and they don't take the time to get to know you. And she said to me, Carol, when you did this little group with my daughter, and I was allowed to come, you were the best friend that I had in America. And she went every day to the university and was among people, but none of them had any time to really develop a relationship with her. That was a real insight for me as an American. Both of these women came here as Christians, which is a very unusual thing because most international students come here, some with absolutely zero knowledge of Christianity. I'm always glad if they know the word Christian. So I rarely say I'm a Lutheran because that would just cause a whole conversation to go someplace else. So I talk about being a Christian, and I'm just delighted if they even know that terminology. But both of them came here as a Christian. Could you just both tell us, how did you find Christianity different here than in your home country? Both of these women came here as Christians, which is a very unusual thing because most international students come here, some with absolutely zero knowledge of Christianity. I'm always glad if they know the word Christian.
So I rarely say I'm a Lutheran because that would just cause a whole conversation to go someplace else. So I talk about being a Christian, and I'm just delighted if they even know that terminology. But both of them came here as a Christian. Could you just both tell us, how did you find Christianity different here than in your home country?
In Japan, they would try to hide they are Christian. I was like that way also. In U.S., like, people put some like a sticker in the car, like a fish mark, or yeah, something like Bible verse. But in Japan, as they will hang up the lucky charm of the Buddhism, they do that. But like they never hang the cross in the car or something like that, because if they find we are Christian, they will think we are weak people. We had to follow them. Christianity, because we are not strong enough. That's true. But they think they will look down on us because we had to have Christianity for make strong us. But yeah, this they don't discriminate us, but like they will think they had to follow Christianity because they are so weak. They cannot strong enough. But in U.S., they are more open to talk about Christianity. Some people are respect, but I'm not for sure. My husband didn't tell me so much. But I think they are more open, but in Japan, they are more closed.
I think in Malaysia, it depends. People are allowed to be Christian. And, well, in school, sometimes you get teased by your classmate because you're Christian, not because you're weak or something, but it's just different. I mean, if you're Malay, you're supposed to be a Muslim. If you're Chinese, you're supposed to be a Taoist or a Buddhist. If you're Christian, then you're different. So, but because I grew in my dad is a deacon and an elder. Right now he's in the seminary, so we learn to stand up for our faith even when we're very young. So when I come here, it's too comfortable to be Christian here.
Good insight. As an international student, what was your greatest challenge? What was your greatest challenge? Maybe what was the most difficult thing you had to overcome? What caused you the most trouble being an international student?
It's kind of a difficult question, but
why don't you answer first?
I think it's to be accepted as one of you. I mean, I won't be American or, you know, but the language. I mean, I speak English when I come here, and my host parents compliment me for how well I spoke, but a lot of the slang I don't understand, and I feel sometimes like a fool in a group, you know, when people, Americans like to joke, and sometimes what they joke about, you don't understand. Sometimes now, I still, you know, the subtle jokes, we still don't get it. So, yeah, that is the hardest part, and being make fun of by your classmate or your professor sometimes?
I can share. It did happen to one of my Taiwanese friends. She was introduced to her class as the China woman. She is, you know, the China doll thing. Well, that was kind of the mindset of that particular professor. She was extremely offended. She had not been here very long. She classified herself as Taiwanese, not Chinese, and she's an outspoken enough woman that she said to the professor, "I am Taiwanese." But he introduced her again as the woman from the China woman is what he called her. But I think it's a sensitivity that we need on our part for the guest in our country, that we know how they want to be addressed. So if I were to invite, usually I don't even say where they're from. If I introduce, I would say, "This is my friend Yoko and this is my friend Ruth." And if you want to find out more where they're from, I allow you to do that. I don't like to be introduced as, "This is Carol Carl's wife."
Aww.
Aww. But I love it in my LWML things when they say, this is Carl, Carol's husband. Back to the story here. If you could give Americans, you know, one piece of advice about working with internationals, what would be your advice for them?
Just have initiation. Like, international student cannot talk to you first. I was so. I really hesitated to talk to Americans because I cannot speak English so well. But when I was in Japan, many international, some came from America. I always try to talk. But that means you have to do because I did. But it's more, I was thinking, if someone talk to me, I feel more comfortable to talk. Also, maybe I say something is boring, but please be patient because we couldn't talk so much.
Yeah, I think just illustrate her point. That's very important to be initiative talking to the international student. I want to put it more into a church setting. You know, if an international student come to your church, just, you know, don't feel like, oh, somebody's talking to them, so I'm fine. Doesn't matter. Six people surround them. They like that. They like that. Don't feel like they're being attacked or something, you know. They really like that feeling. But if, you know, they just stood there, nobody cared to talk to them, that is, they really feel like, oh, well, that's how American. And a lot of international students reflect to me, Americans just not too cold, to not very friendly. Another point is joking. If you want to make jokes or something, care enough to explain if they don't understand.
That's an important thing. We use so many idioms in my life. Someone asked me not too long ago, what's a sheet cake? Have you ever thought about those English words? A sheet cake. She had no clue what a sheet cake was. But she needed to ask and find out. But we say things like that all the time. Carl said the other day, I'll give my eye teeth for that. Or the one about my foot's asleep. We would say that. But we just have a whole realm of those kind of things that we say that internationals just don't have an idea. And it's important that if you're going to use those things that you also take the time to share with them what they mean. Both of you have been involved in international student ministry, which is a part of our church. Why do you think that this ministry is so important for us to continue?
I was in Concordia Irvine. There is a church service every morning instead of Wednesday. But there was 30 or 40 Japanese students out there, but almost nobody comes because they don't understand anything. Just president or some church person who are working for the service talking. They never have a chance to talk. International ministry is more small opportunity and more have a chance to talk to American student. Also, this is a great chance to hear the gospel who are not the Christian, but it's more personally, it's more fun to have a Bible study instead of only attending service. So I think this is very important to share the gospel with the non-Christian student.
I think it's important or very helpful for us to do this because when this student, they are at home, they have their own community and it's hard for them to step into the church. But here, a lot of international students will thought all American are Christian. So since they are here, they want to learn Christianity, to learn American culture, and Christianity is part of that culture. So their heart is more open. And so if we approach them at the right time or, you know, just be friends with them, they might get a better chance to know, to learn about Christianity and to learn about Christ's gospel better than when they're at home.
Thank you very much for being willing to come here this morning and to speak to us in your second language. Let's show our appreciation to them.
Just a couple of comments, and then we can have some question time. We LCMS people, and it's probably true in other denominations, tend to be bean counters. We like to look at numbers and say, this year, so many people joined the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. This year, so many people dropped out the back year, out the back door. We have a net increase of 37 people or whatever it might be. You heard the story, if you were in chapel yesterday, about Eli and Sinji. There are many stories like that. About 25 stories like that in southern Michigan. And while the number might seem very small, that 25 people have come to baptism and have come to make a profession of faith in Jesus Christ, 25 is a wonderful number of people, because every time one person comes, the angels rejoice. And I celebrate, as ministry is one-to-one, and as one person comes to make a confession of faith in Jesus Christ. For those many international students who have come here and who have had gospel love or gospel care, I pray that as they return back home, there will be an opportunity for them one day to come to know the fullness of Jesus Christ by people in sharing in their own culture. The work goes on. Carol and I will hopefully be in Michigan another 4 years. The missionary call was a 7 to 10 year term call. After the next 4 years, I don't know where God will be leading, but we are indeed blessed to be called by our denomination. We're having the time of our lives. We are being blessed by the international students who share with us, and God is using us to be a blessing to others. Perhaps there are questions for myself, for Carol, for Yoko, or Ruth. We welcome those questions. There are some, you're probably all familiar with the questions and the microphones here. That way everybody can hear the questions. Thanks for redoing my microphone.
I recently met a Muslim student, and he was asking me about Christianity and my faith, and he said that you probably don't want to go through this, you know, answering questions. And I was like, well, no, you know, let's talk. And he says, whenever I ask my Christian friends about their faith, they run away. And a lot of the questions he asked, I almost wanted to run away. And so I could kind of relate, but at first I was kind of shocked at that, you know, that would happen, until I thought about when I was back in college and I knew students from more than 12 different countries, and even when they expressed an interest in knowing what I believed, I was did a very poor job, and a couple of them very likely would have gone to church if I invited them, yet just really dropped the ball. And I'm wondering how we can prepare our high school students for when they go out to colleges around the country to help them, so they maybe have some better tools to help their friends, their national friends, and communicate the gospel of Jesus Christ to them.
Thank you. I would say there are two ways to really encourage young people, high school students, to be equipped for reaching out to students once they get to the university campus. One is to invite college students and international students, if that's possible, to come to the congregation to spend time with high school, perhaps high school seniors. The other is through the campus ministry counselor, who is now Richard Manis. Bob Lang retired this last August, and Richard Manis, who's been serving as campus pastor in College Station, Texas, is in the process of moving. He probably will be in place as campus ministry counselor in March 1st. The focus for campus ministry these days is to encourage congregations to consecrate, to commission, to set aside high school seniors as congregational missionaries as they leave the congregation and go off to the campus. 70% of American students on college campuses are unchurched. And you know about the Americans, the international students who are there. So if there is a way that a congregation can, in a Sunday service, to commission the young people as they move off to college, it will bring an awareness to the congregation that these are our representatives. It will bring an awareness to the student that they're not going to the womb of a campus ministry once again to be protected from the world. They're going out now equipped with the gospel of Jesus Christ to be representatives in the world. Those two, I think, are important.
You had talked about how this is a new model. It's different than what you originally thought or what the concept was. Is there available for a congregation that wants to look at international, a blueprint, a manual, you know, what are the pitfalls, how to do this, what are some ideas, or is this being developed at this time?
Yes, wonderful question. There is. How to... Is Jonathan here somewhere? Not Jonathan. Michael, what's the name of that book that you're going to show to your class this afternoon? Is it How to Develop a Ministry to International Students in Your Congregation? Oh, we got a little one. All right. And it's published by... The World at Your Door. If it's gone, Michael, it's because I took it, because I don't have that book. Thank you. The international, the campus ministry office of the LCMS also has a loose leaf folder. It's entitled A Friendship Ministry with International Students. International Students Incorporated, which is a non-denominational group out of Colorado Springs, also has a variety of materials that will help a congregation start a ministry. Their materials are quite good. They've been in, they're the really the granddaddies of international student ministry in the United States. They've been at it for 40 plus years. Joyfully, the LCMS is the only mainline denomination that I know of that is intentionally reaching out to international students. I'm really pleased to say that about the LCMS. The Assembly of God people are just beginning now a real outreach among international students. But the LCMS has been there for 5 years. There's another question over here.
Having gone to a Concordia, it was never a problem when we had international students, when they had questions, to sit and talk to them. I remember talking with my friends from youth group in high school who went to public universities, that wasn't necessarily the case for them. And I'm just wondering how, like, University of Michigan and Michigan State University respond when you come in and want to evangelize on their campuses.
I would never say to a foreign student advisor, I want to evangelize on campus. Because they would say, we're closing the doors to you. I would be very careful. The foreign student offices in the United States all belong to a group called NAFSA, which is it used to be called National Association of Foreign Student Offices and Advisors, something like that. And the sentence that they subscribe to says something like, we will not coerce, force, arm twist, proselytize anyone on our campuses. There needs to be kind of a real open atmosphere. International student advisors have asked me, you know, are you going to say that Jesus is the only way? And I remember telling Peggy Arbanis, who's at Michigan State University, I said, yes, I will tell students that Jesus is the only way, but I will never force them to believe that. I will share my faith, but I will never twist arms, I will never coerce. And I need to be very careful about that. There are groups on campus who will invite international students to a potluck or a meal or a picnic. After the international students eat, then there will be the evangelistic presentation. And international students are surprised because no one told them that this was going to be an opportunity for them to hear about the Christian gospel. Whenever we advertise our ministry, there is always a statement on that sheet of paper, on the flyer, this is a Christian ministry supported by people in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And I want to be very upfront so that we never surprise international students. All of a sudden they discover, you're Christian. I want them to know that right up front. So international student offices will be opposed, in favor of. There's any variety of international student offices. University of Michigan, for example, is a very politically correct university. I don't believe that there is one Christian working in the international student office. But it is possible to do international student ministry there. You can meet international students in the union, on the street. There are ways to invite them. But coercion and proselytism are out of order. And I don't do that. I said in the class this morning, was that this morning? The Holy Spirit is the one who touches and turns hearts anyhow. It isn't my job to do that. Dr. G.
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you very much for your address, and also three ladies, you know, who presented very practical, but at the same time, very realistic picture of what you have experienced. While I was listening to you, you and also these ladies, I could not avoid a certain amount of emotion, of nostalgia. The only difference is I was about the same as this Indonesian student. The difference was he took Boeing 747 and airplane all the way to Midwest, but I took boat and the Greyhound bus and all kind of things. Then there were not many foreign students. This was some decades ago, long time ago. But the point is, what I would like to say is, I have many similar experiences and similar feelings, observations, etc. But that's not my task here. But I'd like to just encourage you, first of all, thank and also appreciate our synod finally started this international student ministry about 20 years ago, right?
Yes.
That's a little bit late, but the late is better than nothing.
That's correct. Yes.
But you know, when I came to America, that time I almost never heard any kind of international student ministry among Lutherans, nor even any Christian groups. Mm-hmm. And so there were a few independent, some kind of para church groups, but not definitely related to Lutherans. I think I'm glad that you folks are doing this. This is a tremendous importance today in my mind. 2 points. One is you are ministering to not ordinary citizens, not ordinary people from Indonesia or Africa or Japan, Korea, and the, you are really serving what I call multiplicators. In other words, when you have 10 people under your care, they will multiply thousands, in sometimes millions. And in the future, they will be the leading members of the society and countries where they go back, if they do. And this has been the case in the past decades. I am sure from now on, in the next century, there will be more cross-cultural, as well as international and global exchange and so forth and so on. So your service is to not just to these individuals, but also to the nations in the world. That's one thing. The other thing, of course, is more Christian and evangelical or mission perspectives. I think it's very significant. Today, how can you understand, let us say, culture of certain people and certain nations and even the politics even today, all related to the philosophical and the theological, if you like, and religious aspect as well. Now, these people, I think, whom we are serving, as you folks are serving, they will be tremendous the assets to not only this continent, but also in the countries, in fact, throughout the world. Just, I'd like to congratulate you and keep up good work. You know, these people, they may not be, they are quite handicapped culturally and linguistically today, but they are somebody in their own societies. So I hope this particular aspect of ministry will be both in quality and quantity expand among our campuses in America and to make a great service to the nations. That is just a remark, but this is very serious in my mind, and you are in the actually growing edge and most important area of ministry today. Thank you.
Thank you. I am amazed at the people that God is bringing here. There's one young man from Germany. He received very recently his PhD in theoretical nuclear physics. He is a Christian. He and his wife are today leading a Bible study among mostly people from mainland China. And people are coming to know Jesus because of this doctor. Peter and Jana Klan, he just received his doctorate in chemical engineering. He is returning to the Czech Republic. They grew in their faith, and I believe that as they return, they will be gospel sharers with the people of that country. Hong Ling Wang was just baptized at Huron River, Huron Hills Baptist Church. I was there on that Sunday. It was December 20th. He was immersed. He gave a testimony of faith. He is a department head at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences in Beijing, which has a total of 7,000 professors and educators at that school. He is one of three in his department who is a Christian. Believe me, God will use him as he touches people in Beijing. By the way, a place where we cannot go to be gospel sharers unless we do it in response to a question or in secret. We cannot go as missionaries to the two largest populated countries in the world, mainland China and India. So God is blessing us with a wonderful opportunity. And for a long time, I believe that I had to stretch who I was. For many years, I was not particularly comfortable with PhD people, postdoctoral people. I'm comfortable with you, Bob. That's okay. He's not comfortable with a lot of PhD people also. But we speak a very common language of love and care and responsibility and friendship. And it is through the doors such as these that God opens wide for us to be presenters of the good news of Jesus. Any other questions? Maybe we can do one more if anybody... That's the way to stop questions. Is there one more question? Then nobody has one and then we can close. That's the way to do it, Bob. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Actually, some of my best friends have PhDs. We are most grateful, Carol and Carl, and also Yoko and Ruth, for your being here and sharing with us today and giving us a glimpse of an important ministry and an important experiment in the life of really of North American Christianity. You guys are really pioneers. We're delighted particularly that they can be here for Mission Fest today, and I want to remind you all again of all the festivities that are taking place this evening. There's one other guest that's here for Mission Fest that I would like to introduce, because he's the same kind of experimenter, a guy who's involved in something really exciting. Steve, will you just stand? This is Pastor Steve Lee from Colorado Springs. And Steve is also doing something that just intrigues me a whole lot. He's an outreach ministry and pastoral support ministry for peace officers, an occupational, vocational approach to Christian outreach rather than a geographically based outreach. And that's another new kind of thing. And so you'll have the opportunity to hear Steve talk this evening also at Mission Fest. So we'll see you all there. Again, I'm sure that Carl, Carol, Yoko, Ruth would be glad to talk with you individually if you have more questions. And if not, go on your way in the name and in the peace of the Lord, and we'll see you this evening. Thanks for coming.